Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed at home in your Keurig coffee maker with Dunkin' cold K-Cup pods. Just brew it hot over ice and enjoy flavor that's crafted to serve cold. The home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Hey there, Second City Hockey listeners, it's Dave Melton here, and before we get to the show, I wanted to let you in on a little secret. All of those ads you just heard, if you want to listen to the show without them, visit secondcityhockey.com and sign up for either one of our subscription tiers, where the perks include ad-free versions of the Musings on Madison podcast.
And with the first overall selection in the 2023 NHL Draft, the Chicago Blackhawks are very proud to select from the Regina Pats, the Western Hockey League, Connor Bedard.
That's going wild. Good. Game on. Game on. Hey, want to play some hockey?
Score Chicago.
Welcome in to another episode of Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Dave Melton, the site manager at Second City Hockey. You can find me on Twitter at DMelt57. And once again, just as a reminder, if you are listening to this and you haven't done so already, you can leave us a five-star review wherever it is you are listening to this podcast. Say something nice about us in reviews. If you leave us four stars or fewer, we'll assume you're a Blues fan. SecondCityHockey.com is the website to go to for all of our game previews, recaps, game threads all season long, along with the exclusive content, which is available to our subscribers. $5 a month or $10 a month gets you into all the stuff we're going to be doing all season long. Details of that are at the website, and we also have merchandise available for those who want to further support the website. I've got two of my linemates with me this evening. We are a little bit shorthanded. Up first, she is the Second City Hockey Bull and Wall of Text, and she is not on Twitter, but her name at secondcityhockey.com is LBR. It's Betsy.
It's really fucking cold down here.
All right. Please define really fucking cold, because then me and Eric can laugh.
Well, I mean, right now it's like in the 40s, but like today it was like in the 50s, and it's the shock of the cold. Everybody knows I hate the South in the summer because it's so hot and humid. But like normally we have a fake fall, and then we have like a 2-week fall, and then we have winter. And our winters are mild, but for some reason it decided we're not going to have a fake fall, but we are going to have a fake winter for like 4 days. And so it's been between the 40s and 50s. It's going to go back up into the 70s next week, but like, why? I don't.
I thought this was the time of the year where you stop hating the weather after hating it for all of the summer months.
Well, it will be fine if it didn't just suddenly happen. It was 78 the other day. It was the high of the day. And you know, the night times were in the upper 60s, and all of a sudden it's like 42 at night. Do you know how terrible it is to have to, in the middle of the night, walk down, turn the heater on, and then you're like, why? I don't have any of my big blankets out yet.
I mean, Betsy got down to the low 40s last weekend and I went camping. So
no, I sure it went gradual for you.
I mean, had a space heater. We were prepared for the elements, but yes.
I had to go to my storage unit to find my winter clothes. I don't have anything long sleeve. I was like, oh, it's time. Except it's going to be in the 70s again next week. For like another week and a half after that, it'll still be in the 70s, and then it'll go start to trail down a little bit. But it's cold.
All right. Well, next week, we look forward to the upcoming Georgia weather report, the Georgia weather corner with Betsy. Whatever happens next week. Also with us this evening, the official Second City Hockey Pizza correspondent, Eric Gaggenheimer.
I did not watch the game last night. I went to a concert instead for a very loud, very good band. But I was within 1 mile of the United Center, and I had a couple hours to kill before the show started, and we could not find a single place to watch the Blackhawks game less than a mile from the United Center, which has always kind of bummed me out. But for some reason, it especially kind of bummed me out given the excitement that's happened in the last week or so. So places by the United Center, somebody get a TV. I'll go there next time.
Let's even go. Like, I mean, I feel like even like the Billy Goat didn't have the Husk game on TV. I mean, I know it's not really a bar, more of a restaurant, but
no, we were more up. We were by like Fulton and Lake.
Oh, okay.
Cause we ended up, it was at the Cobra Lounge. So we were over like more in that vicinity, but still. You couldn't, if we climbed up on the L stop, the Ashland Green, we could have seen the United Center from there. We're close enough to see it from a height. So, but yeah, we tried to get it on the phone for a little bit and we were able to kind of follow along like that. But it would have been nice to go sit somewhere for like an hour and a half and watch the end of it. So,
but most importantly, you said it was a very good, very loud band. So who was this band?
It was Holy Fun.
Oh, very good. Very excellent.
See? Very good. Very loud.
Very good. Very loud. Yes.
I don't know who that is.
We'll introduce them after the show to you. Betsy.
They're from Arizona, so they were also complaining about how cold it is when it was 48 degrees last night. So you would have gotten along well in that regard, Betsy.
That's good to know.
I like how Dave, when he's like, "I went camping," no, that came out of you.
That came from somewhere deep inside. That was
it was pure emotion. It was like a visceral reaction.
It's so cold. Why would you go outside? I don't want to do that.
There's a fire.
Yeah, only when you're near it, and then you take 5 steps away, and you're like, "No, I'm cold again." I don't like that. I'm an indoor person, apparently.
That's why you build a big fire.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of cold things, you guys want to talk about some ice hockey?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Ah, there we go. Nailed the segue. So we're here to talk about the Blackhawks after 4 games of actual real life regular season hockey with Connor Bedard in it and everything. And I say that name specifically because there's a lot of things to talk about from the first 4 games, but I think the most obvious thing to discuss initially is our first impressions of young Connor Bedard, the number one overall pick in this year's draft, hyped up for years. I mean, I don't think it's possible to summarize the hype around him in a mere few sentences for a podcast, so I'm not even going to try. I'm just going to ask Betsy, what stood out to you in the first 4 games of the Connor Bedard era?
The way that he transitions, like, that might seem like the silliest thing, but he hasn't scored yet, even though, like, a real shot off of like what we consider his like amazing shot. He hasn't scored that yet. Mm-hmm. And his passing has been great, but like, honestly, most of the players have fumbled them. right. And it's getting a little frustrating actually, but just the way that he effortlessly puck handles through legitimate NHL players at this point, you know, I know Klingberg, for example, is not really like he's
cannot play defense.
He's trailed down, but like, Connor Bedard made him look like Tenorti, you know, like that. That's not good. So
it's good. Well, it's good for us. It's good for us if somebody's going to be watching him.
But it's been fun to watch him do that. He doesn't seem to care about the physicality. Like, players have come at him and he's pretty much bounced back. So he needs to get a little bit more like Patrick Kane was, where he just didn't get hit, you know, very much, if at all. You know, he had that little water bug in him. And I think Bedard can get that really easily. But his anticipation is great. Everything, he sees the ice at just like such a high level. Either, again, the disappointing part is that currently none of the teammates are really connecting with him fully, even Taylor Hall. Interestingly, the players that have connected with him the most are Reichel on the power play, and Korchinski has had a couple of really good give and go moments with him. So it'll be interesting to see how he transitions as he plays more, will he like lower himself to them and like adjust to them, which I think he will. I think he's just got the smarts for it. Or will they adjust his line mates to him? So
I think the thing you mentioned about how like the only goal he scored so far was on a wraparound. And that is like the talk about him, the biggest talking point about him and his skill set was the shot that he has. And obviously wraparound is not a great indicator of that. And I feel like the one specific type of goal that you saw on so many of Connor Bedard's highlights in the juniors was he would skate into the zone, right at a defenseman. And then he would either pull up and create some space or move just a little bit left or right, usually dragging the puck with him, and open up the angle and then just blister it under the bar past the goalie. And it feels like he's tried to do that at the NHL level. And every time he's done that, either the back check has caught up to him or the defenders poked it off his stick because it's the NHL, not juniors anymore. So I think once he figures out how to turn that mode of attack into a goal, you're going to see the goals start to pile up. And it feels like it's probably coming soon.
Yeah. It would be, again, nice if he wasn't doing it all on his own. Like there are some moments where he's just so far ahead of other players, you know, like they've got to figure out the flow with him a little bit better. And again, like thinking back to when Kane came into the thing and he was like this offensive dynamite player, Taves was just as good in his own right, just slightly different type of player. Right. And then they had Sharp with them and they just went wild. They could go wild. And Taylor Hall can be Taylor Hall. I think he's still good, but like Donato is Donato. So they've got to figure that out.
I'm sorry.
And then of course, yeah, I kind of want them to like, let them go wild and figure it out. Cause I think that would help too, with Bedard trying to figure out his own timing with his shot too. Like it's a whole, just he's got to get the flow of the NHL together, but you can only do that if you just like take the reins off and let him do whatever he wants with whoever he wants, essentially.
What about you, Eric? What have you seen?
Well, I'll only bring this up every single podcast until the end of time, but one of us was in the building for Connor Bedard's first goal. And that person is me. I'm pointing at myself with my thumbs, which obviously no one can see right now.
Famously a visual medium, these podcasts.
Famously a visual medium. No, I mean, in writing a bunch of articles about him last year and watching a lot of his goals, he scores in a lot of different ways. So in some ways, it's kind of fitting that his first goal was not what we would assume would kind of traditionally have been his first goal. But it was still, it's all the things that maybe aren't so obvious about him, which he had a nice give and go with Donato on that one. He took kind of a weird fluky shot from a weird angle, but the sense to kind of follow it up and the instinct to stay around the outside. And then, I mean, it was there for a second and you can see him check that Ullmark is still hugging the post on the opposite side and he just wrapped it around super fast. And I mean, he almost ended up with the second goal. I think it was his next shift that was also kind of on a give and go. And it came and he just couldn't lift it over Ullmark's pad. I think that one came back to him from Foligno. So, you know, everybody always talks about Austin Matthews and him as having kind of similar shots. And Matthews kind of surprised everybody and caught them by storm, you know, when he first came in. But there was an article last week and someone referenced it. I think it was Powers, but essentially like Austin Matthews has had to redo his shot like three times as the league has gotten adjusted to it and kind of gotten the book on it. He's worked on release points and launch angles. So that's what we're kind of seeing Bedard do right now. You know, you mentioned his timing's not the same. And obviously in the WHL, they're terrified of him when he's coming down to open ice. So he goes this way or that. And just as often you'd see a lot of breakaways and a lot of moves in close because he's faking the shot. They're respecting the shot so much. He just pulls it back and walks around him. Nobody's respecting the shot yet. They're expecting him to shoot. So I think you're seeing him try to dance and make moves with the puck a little bit more, especially in close. And sometimes it's working, like it worked on Klingberg or like it worked on Parayko in, you know, that first preseason game where he's just walking guys. And so once the shot gets down and he gets it to where I think we all think that it's going to be, that will open up that a lot more too. So, I mean, it's A plus across the boards. I think we're all so excited and with good reason, you know, and that's, we haven't even really seen a lot of the stuff that he's known for. He hasn't capitalized on that yet, but yeah, go ahead, Dave.
I think that's exactly what I was going to say, is just that, you know, he has in four games, he has one goal and two assists. And that feels like, it feels like there's a lot more coming. And I think Ben Pope tweeted that out today, that like he is producing shots and goal, shots and chances as much as Austin Matthews is, and the goals just haven't shown up yet, but it feels like they're on the way very soon here. So it just like feels just like a matter of time type of thing. So it's hard to envision that there's not going to be a major spurt to scoring points and goals and assists out of him very soon.
I think to me right now, the key is they got to put Korchinski on the first power play. They're just not getting enough from Seth Jones. And regardless, even if they were, I think Korchinski has an offensive level that Seth Jones just does not. And I think that will open it up a lot for them. And I think once he's able to kind of pot a couple and the power play is able to get a couple, you're going to see him get dangerous in a whole different way. So to me, I mean, that would be one thing that they could do if they feel like they need to kind of try to figure something out to kickstart him a little bit after these next few games. And if the power play is still kind of not doing very well, that would be something I'd look for them to do, or I think that they should do, that could help not only the power play, but could help him and kind of get him off. Not that he's not slumping or anything like that.
Right?
It's just, we haven't seen, you know, he hasn't had like one of those shots yet, like we saw so many times in juniors from him.
He has 3 points in four games and we're like, he can definitely do more. That's again, I think that is a good way to express just how good of a player this is. That he 3 points in four games. I don't want to say disappointment, because that's not the word for it, but it's like, it feels like there's more within there to be mined.
We're all kind of just sitting there waiting for that one goal, you know, that one shot to just break the seal. I actually really like Eric's idea of putting Korchinski like on the power play. I know the big knock against that normally is, oh, well, he's not ready defensively. And I'm like, have you seen Seth Jones defensively on the power play? They've let up so many. I mean, they're lucky that the Leafs didn't score a million on the Blackhawks power plays this last game. They haven't been great. They've allowed quite a few shots against on their own power play. So I don't think it would be any worse.
I'll even agree with you and take it a step further. I think part of that is teams key on Jones, because they know he's a skater, but he's an East West. Like he's not, he can't shake a guy. I cannot really recall a single time. Yeah.
He doesn't attack the net the way that honestly Korchinski has in a small sample. Yes. But he's shown that that's what he is capable of doing.
They can go back to, go ahead. Sorry, Eric, you go.
No, I was just going to say he's elusive in a way that Jones is just not elusive. And so adding that element, you have to respect that. And that's what he needs, more time. Bedard needs more time. And they're keying on him. Every team, that's all they're doing is taking away his shot. And they're forcing him to pass so other guys have opportunities. But if Korchinski's walking down the lane, you can't stay on Bedard. You have to move over, and that's going to open it up more.
Yeah, I was looking at, so Jay Fresh just posted a thing about like undershooting, you know, essentially these guys should have way more goals. And the top skater that should have more expected goals based on their shots and where they're shooting from is actually Lucas Reichel. And then Bedard is like third or fourth or something like that. And I'm like, yeah, those kids, and it's because of their power play time. When they're on the power play together, they are able to at least feed off of each other better. And if you add Korchinski to that mix, I think like they could seriously go off, like the three of them. On top of that, if they really were worried and they wanted, you know, like it's too bad, they think it'll be too bad with, you know, a rookie, a 19-year-old rookie on the power play, they could go 2D and have Seth Jones be, they could do a Keith Seabrook type of power play, which is exactly what they ran for a lot of Kane and Taves rookie year, mostly because they didn't have a lot of, they didn't have like the best forwards. But, you know, they had Kane, Sharp, Taves, Keith Seabrook as one of their main power plays. So you could do something similar, put Reichel, Bedard, or Bedard, Hall, and then slap, I guess, Corey Perry there. So it's
there you go.
The goalie. And then, yeah, have two D-men if you really need it. I actually think they should put Gutman on the power play where Corey Perry is, but that's just, he's really, when he was at the Rockford IceHogs, he was really good at getting, he had a little bit like of an Andrew Shaw. He's not big, but he's really good at still screening a goalie and making a muck in front of the net. And they scored a lot with him in that role a lot of times. So there's options. They have options to play around with.
Yeah, and I think while we're here, we mentioned a few of the other younger players, and obviously Bedard's going to get a lot of talk for obvious reasons on these airways for this season and several beyond it. But I think we talked about Korchinski a little bit, but I guess Betsy, I'll run it over to Eric first this time. Do you have any impressions of any of the other youngsters, the Kaisers, Korchinskis, Reichels, Vlasics of the world?
The game that I saw in person, Korchinski and Vlasic both really stood out to me in ways. Vlasic kind of snuck up on me, and I think snuck up on everybody.
Yes.
And he's been really good and really steady. And it's almost like you can see the confidence, and he's not rushing. And that was the thing everybody liked Kaiser for in the preseason. Then all of a sudden seems like it's gone. And then just Korchinski, his ability to, again, just to be elusive and to double back or to make plays and buy time. And whether it's like simple stuff, like for a line change, but you can see there's a respect for his skating ability that I don't think anybody else on the team, especially defensively, just gets right now. And so it's little things like that, like subtle little things. I think they have to keep him up. I don't think you can send him back. And I don't think, you know, he's made a couple mistakes here, but he's arguably been, I think you could put, if you want to say, and you could say Vlasic has been their best defender so far. Korchinski's two or three, like he's right there too. So really impressed by both of them. They both look like, you know, especially as the season wears on, like I'm really excited to see what they can do and how they settle in even more. I mean, that Vlasic pass to Perry, we haven't seen anything like that from him yet.
Yeah.
You know? So if that's a trick that he has up his sleeve as he starts to feel more confident, like that's huge. That's fantastic. That's a great thing. And I think we'll see Korchinski once he starts to score and contribute a little bit more too, whether that's power play, whatever it is. So both of those guys, like big, big thumbs up.
Betsy, what about you? Any other observations or responses, I guess, to what Eric was talking about there?
And here we go back to the preseason podcast when you were asking questions like, who's going to be Jones's partner, do you think? I think I'm the only person that said Vlasic, even though I am a noted Kaiser fangirl. I was like, I think it's going to be Vlasic because I think it's because he's farther along and he'll suit Jones as a partner better. Because Jones likes to wheel and deal, you know, he likes to go out and do stuff, and Vlasic will be better at just staying. Like he's a stay at home guy. He has, the stretch pass that you talked about. He did that in college pretty regularly. Like that's a known thing that he was pretty good at. He didn't get a lot of points for it. He's not like super offensive. But he can thread the needle pretty well, especially long distances, if not for his teammates to score, then to at least get them into the zone. So it will be interesting to see again if he can continue that, because he's got more offense in him than maybe people think. But I also don't want people to think he's like going to be Seabrook offense, because a lot of people did make that, they're like, that's a Seabrook like pass, and it's like it is, but I don't know if he's going to knock the points in other places. His end zone passing is not quite as good as Seabrook's was, for example. It's not bad, but it's, and also it could just be that he needs more time to acclimate, you know, you never know. Kaiser has not looked as he just hasn't looked as good. He had like one really bad period against Boston, for example, but I feel like some of that is because of who he's skating with. Like, how can you be good if your partner is Tenordian Zaitsev, or his fucking Russian name? I can never say them right.
Zaitsev.
Zaitsev. Yeah, I always say it wrong. Every time. I always say it how I think it should be pronounced. Anyway.
We apologize to the Nikita Zaitsev fan club on behalf of Betsy.
I called him stale bread in my latest recap. I was like, I just can't. It's not all on them. Don't get me wrong, but like, he is stuttering in a way because his guy is never in tune with him, like, at all. When he was skating with Jones, they were keeping up with each other, and it's easy to stay calm when your partner is also steady, you know, or skating well. How can you, when the guy is behind you at all times, like by huge lengths, you know? And there's the other flip side of that is he's got to learn to play with someone like that. And an example of that was Nick Leddy. Nick Leddy had to learn to play with Roosevelt. Roosevelt is not fleet of foot, but he was decent defensively, and Nick Leddy wanted to go out and be like a little bit wilder. Obviously Nick Leddy is a like looser defenseman than Kaiser mm-hmm. ever was, but at the same time, Leddy had to learn how to adjust to his teammate a little bit better. Kaiser needs to do the same, but still, I just don't understand why they don't have Phillips up and they just have a kid pairing, you know, like a bottom pairing of kids. That would be, Phillips is ready, I think, for the NHL. So just let them, I'm all about, like, this is a transition season, let the kids play. I want there to be, like, a forward kid line. I would love to have Gutman, Reichel, and Kurashev on a line together, because Reichel and Gutman were amazing together in Rockford. Kurashev had some chemistry with Reichel when he was up last time. Let them be a line that just goes out there and takes a bunch of offense, you know? Like, I just want... Yeah. Just let them go wild. That's all I want.
Well, I guess, you know, I mean, I don't want to, I wouldn't mind seeing that either. Like, I don't think your point is incorrect. I think, it just would be interesting to see if maybe that happens later in the season at some point, that they give Phillips the first 20, 30 games or so down in Rockford before they bring him up to Chicago. And then maybe Zaitsev or gets bought out or traded or put on waivers or whatever, or Tenordi or whatever. And then the fourth thing, I think I'm also like, I would like to see Philip Kurashev get back from injury and see if he can help bolster the top six a little bit along with Bedard. Cause I think, you know, I know we've obviously put a lot of our eggs in the Phil Kurashev basket on this podcast and just his entire operation. And hopefully to see some of that pay off this season, or we might just all have to give up on that. But I think that's still, that will be a discussion ongoing as the season progresses, for sure.
Not to pick on Kaiser too much, but he looks overwhelmed to me.
He does. And that's what I agree. I don't know if it's all his fault.
Well, I'll take it a little bit further than what you were saying, and I completely agree with you too. That Boston game, and I'm not trying to hang it on him by any stretch of the imagination, but that 2-on-1 is what turned the game. And it was fucking Lucic and Pasternak. Like, you close out Pasternak every time. You give Lucic that shot all day long, and he didn't. He got caught and he froze. And that's what opened it up for Pasternak, and that was your game. Like, that's it right there.
Why was he by himself?
I'm sure that Tenordi was trying to pick a fight with somebody in the stands or something.
Not in the play.
It was a broken play. It was a bad broken play, yeah.
Or ending the season of a former Blackhawk or something. I don't know.
I actually 100% agree with you. I think so far in the moments where Kaiser has had to be by himself, he has not done well. But I also don't think any of the other the younger defensemen have had to be in those situations. Korchinski hasn't had to defend a 2-on-1 so far. Vlasic hasn't had to defend a 2-on-1 so far. You know, like, we have no idea what they would, because their partners, like, Murphy's not been great, but he's been better than like the empty shell that is 40. Like, I don't know what to say. Like, but I was also of the opinion that I thought Kaiser should go to Rockford to start.
That's what I'm wondering. Yeah. If that maybe, if this continues that way, if that's not what happens and then Phillips comes and takes his place.
In my initial, when I did the article on Kyuzer for like this upcoming season, I said, I think he should start. He's had a really great preseason and training and training camp and everything like that. But I still think he should start in Rockford and that Phillips should be up because I think Phillips is ready or at least ready to get a longer stint.
Yeah. That entire the discussion around Wyatt Kaiser is a good way to we need like pin this for next September when in case any prospect or young player has a really good preseason that may not necessarily be indicative of what's coming in the regular season. And there's still plenty of time for Kaiser to turn it around. Like he might maybe he'll figure it out when the Hawks come back home and they have the last change and get some more beneficial zone starts, or they get him a different D partner that Betsy approves of. And then things turn north for him in a hurry. But other than that, like I still think, you know, I think overall, you know, Bedard's going to be awesome. I don't think we have any quibbles about that, but seeing Korchinski and Vlasic, especially the Vlasic game against the Maple Leafs, like, and the fact that the Hawks had a 2-goal lead against that Toronto team that, as Betsy correctly pointed out in the recap, is a regular season juggernaut and regular season only, but it was a regular season, so they were in full juggernaut mode in that game, and the Hawks had a 2-goal lead and held on to it. And, you know, Toronto did get some chances as the period went on, but I thought the Hawks actually did a fairly decent job at snuffing them out for most of the third period, and that whole game was very encouraging to see, and it's nice that like I wrote about this this morning at the website, just that it's nice to have the Hawks win a game and that the players who stood out didn't just up their trade value to be flipped at the deadline. Like this was Alex Vlasic playing his ass off and he could be here for a long time. Arvid Soderblom played his ass off in net. He could be here for a long time. So there's, you know, that's two big pieces that you're seeing have really big moments early in the NHL season. They need to do a lot more. They got to keep putting on performances like that before you can really start to believe that this is a long-term piece, but it's a hell of a start for both of those guys and several other players.
Well, and it sounded like Richardson was specifically putting Vlasic out there against Matthews. So, I mean, that's telling the type of confidence that the coaching staff has in him already too. So yeah, for a player who's just really starting off in his professional NHL career, like that's pretty awesome. That's fantastic. That's a thing to be excited about, as you were saying. Absolutely.
I'm efforting the natural stat trick data, and actually, yes, the top pairing for the Hawks. I think to Betsy's point, like Vlasic and Jones, that's your top D pairing. So of course, they're going to be on the ice against the top offensive threat for the Maple Leafs in Auston Matthews. Although they have several others with Marner and Nylander and what have you, but they were so. Jones and Vlasic were on the ice. Those are the top two D men on the ice for the Hawks when Auston Matthews was at the ice in 5-on-5. And the Hawks are in a positive in pretty much every possession statistic that exists during that time. So, I mean, that's a pretty damn good game.
Yeah, it was also Bedard's effect because Bedard's line is the only line that ever, like, I think in any of the games has had positive shot metric numbers. I think all of them have been, every other line has been negative. And Jones and Vlasic play with Bedard most of the game.
Yeah. And I think like the other player I want to touch on quickly, and it's kind of related to some of the things we were talking about earlier with injuries and such, is that I feel like Lucas Reichel, like there's still moments where Lucas Reichel looks really, really good in the, you know, just in the flow of play and all that. It's just he's had four games. He doesn't have a point yet. So that kind of sucks and is a little discouraging. But, I mean, he hasn't had a ton of help with line mates. And, again, that feels like that's another player that might have a point spurt coming soon because it seems like he's doing a lot of other things correctly. He's just not getting rewarded for them yet.
It's also like early season. And I think even when they were stacked sometimes – it takes a while to figure out like personnel and who plays with who and what lines are utilized in what situations and like power play and stuff. And I mean, we even saw it with Reichel a little bit last year where he came up in his first stint. He didn't really do much. And then it took a while. And then when he came back, like, he played well with Athanasiou. And then all of a sudden he put up whatever 15 points in 19 games he ended up doing before he got sent back down for that last stretch. Like, it's funny to think about, you know, all the predictions that we made before the season started, and it's been four games, but how different some of those things already are. So, I mean, there's still a ton of stuff to be learned. And, like, yeah, it's, of course, we'd all love it if Reichel already had a couple points and scored a couple goals. But, I mean, there's still plenty of time. He's not going anywhere. And I think we'll look up at the end of the year and he'll be at, you know, 55, 60 points, somewhere in that range. And I think it'll be a good year for him. It's going to take a while to get there.
Why is Athanasiou playing on the, like, why is he playing what is, like, the fourth line to start games? Like,
that's a great question.
Like, I get, so there's, like, a whole, like, center issue going on the team right now. Like, there's a lot of players that aren't really centers or maybe won't be centers long term. You've got Reichel, who they want to make a center, and he's been playing center in Rockford, but that might not necessarily be where he should be. You've got Gutman, who is a center normally, but he's small too. And you've got Dickinson, who's playing center, and then Athanasiou, who can play center, but he's much better on the wing, and anytime they prop him on the wing, he seems to, like, just come alive. And then you've got Kurashev, who could be a center, but he's not playing right now. Yeah, there's, like, a lot of players that, like, they're probably not, like, their best position is wing, but they're having to play center because there's not a lot of legit. There's no, like, Taves, you know? There's no, like, legit centers on the team.
It did seem weird that because Kurashev was hurt, so they couldn't have the original second line that they wanted that was in the regular season of Kurashev, Reichel, and Athanasiou, so Athanasiou gets pushed down to the fourth line. That did seem like a weird chain of events, but...
Yeah, like, I like Tyler Johnson. I think Tyler Johnson is fine in the top six, top nine, whatever, but...
He had a nifty goal against Toronto on the power play.
Yeah,
yeah, but he also biffed a couple against Montreal the other night that should have been gimmies.
Also true. Yeah.
And then none of us really, like, Radish obviously, like, popped off 20 last year, but again, who remembers any of them? And what has he done so far to not be rotated away? Instead, Reichel was rotated away. Reichel and Athanasiou were flipped in the Leafs game for a little while. And what is Reichel going to do with Tkachuk and Entwistle? Like, come on.
Be real fast.
Yeah.
Which he could do on any line because he's fast.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's four games. So I'm not complaining about it. I just think it's weird that Athanasiou was put on what is essentially a little grinder line. And other than they were probably like, okay, they can be speedy. If they just didn't have Donato on the top of the line, maybe that would help. I don't hate Donato. I he's had some good plays, like the goal, the wraparound goal. They did have, you know, a good back and forth, for example, when they were going into it. But, like, those are, like, 1 out of 10.
Yeah.
Like,
it's just he was playing on the third line in Seattle, was he not?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's you know, and I think there were there was scuttlebutt about either Richardson or the Hawks organization as a collective entity thought that there was something more in Donato that they were going to get this season. And I mean, it's okay if he's just a third line guy. Like, that's a perfectly fine role for him to be in it. But I think the other argument is, I don't know how many other players the Hawks have to throw into the top six over him. They have some options for sure, but
I'm going
to
see him.
Yes. Okay. There you go.
Donato is 27. Yeah. He's not going to suddenly be something else at 27. His high points is like 30, like yeah. 31 maybe.
Yeah.
Like,
it's weird because I think the weird stat with him was he was like top 20 in the league at like generating shots. Like, he got a ton of shots off, even though minutes wise he was like 150th or something. But there's just some modern stats where I'm like, that's great. He generated a ton of shots, but none of them went in.
He can't score, yeah.
So, yeah. So, I mean, I guess that's good if you want tips or rebound. Like, I don't understand that, you know. And they don't have any better options. You know, you have to utilize him in that way right now. But yeah, I don't know how much there is to mine other than kind of what he's shown. Yeah, by the time you're 27 and you've been in the league, whatever, 7 or 8 years that he's been in the league now, like that's a pretty good building block case for that's the type of player you are. He's a third line guy.
You put Athanasiou on the top line and then you create the kids line. You've got, once Kurashev's back, Kurashev, Reichel, Gutman, let them go wild. Just give them all the soft minutes. You have your whatever grinder line you want to call Perry, Dickinson, and Foligno, and then mix and match the leftovers because who cares? And boom, you've got it. I don't care for Radish that much. So I don't care that he's not in the top nine. He's fine wherever to me. The only reason you have him in the top nine is you want to flip him to me. I don't think he's long for the Blackhawks world.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've got a few other topics to get to, Blackhawks related and, well, obviously Blackhawks related. Who else would we talk about? But we're going to get to all that on the other side of this quick timeout.
Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed at home in your Keurig coffee maker with Dunkin' cold K-Cup pods. Just brew it hot over ice and enjoy flavor that's crafted to serve cold. The home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Welcome back to Musings on Madison. And as promised before the break, hit a few other topics we wanted to get into. And I think this is going to be a topic of conversation several points at several points over the course of the season, just because of the nature of the Blackhawks roster this year. In the last two games, I think it's maybe more than just the last two games, but there's been multiple instances of a player from the Blackhawks gets hit, sometimes a young guy, sometimes a veteran. They get hit, and then within a short time frame after a fight breaks out, usually instigated by a Blackhawk player as retribution for the aforementioned hit. Now, I think we have a pretty collective similar viewpoint on all of this, that sometimes like this whole fighting for retribution thing gets a little old, and I think the general any fights that are just like negotiated before the puck drop and the puck drops and they drop the gloves and square off, that just feels dumb. Like I can at least tolerate the ones that build up over the heat of the moment in the middle of a board battle. Two guys decide that they've had enough of each other and they just want to punch each other in the face for a bit. That's at least like, I can get on board with those a little bit more than the staged ones. But I know Betsy, you in particular had a grievance with a recent fight that happened in the Blackhawks Maple Leafs game. So you mentioned it in the recap and there was some discussion about it in the comments. So I wanted to bring it up here just so you could air some grievances once again about that. And maybe Eric and I could maybe offer a few devil's advocate points and see where we go.
The devil doesn't need an advocate. Anyway,
I'm like a Southern preacher right there. That's
I hate that phrase, but anyway,
fair enough.
Because if you're thinking of, never mind, I'm not going to go into why I hate that phrase. That's that's taking a tangent. So my issue with the Murphy-Gregor hit fight was one, Murphy did not, like, somebody tried to say, well, he hit Bedard a couple times hard and he was trying to set the tone. And I was like, okay, that would make sense if he hit him on the shift right after Bedard, but it was two, Murphy had taken two shifts. And the only thing that had happened the shift before that was, Fumbles McFumblesome falling. And McGregor just
also known as the key to Zaitsev for those that aren't aware of Betsy's nicknames yet.
Ice is slippery. He's not the most graceful defenseman. And he fell while Gregor was trying to hit him. But there was nothing blown on the play because it wasn't a hit.
It looked really gross. And I was glad Zaitsev was okay because the way his head got crunched into the boards, it looked like it could have been a really bad injury. So at least that was good.
I'm like, okay, if you want to take that as like a hard hit and you can't touch my teammates, fine. My issue was that the timing of it right off that face-off, that the Blackhawks won and then we're going into the zone. Connor Bedard was shooting the puck when they were you can hear him the puck clack against the boards or the glass because he missed the net. But what if Connor Bedard's shot had gone in? You would have had a goal in a goalless game, and Connor Bedard's first beautiful shot be wiped off for a fight? Come on. Like, everybody would be upset.
So the one point about that is that from what I remember, and I'm pulling this up, you may have accidentally heard the audio in the background there, but it looked like that was negotiated by Murphy and Gregor, like, before the draw, and that as soon as the puck was dropped, like, there was no,
they didn't care about the results. Yeah, but none of the other players knew. Like, so somebody tried to point it out. They're like, well, if all the rest of the players were fine with it, why aren't you? And I was like, how would you know that they knew? Literally, Connor Bedard is sprinting off, okay? I put a screenshot in the comments because I was like, you can literally see the gloves have started flying and they haven't started throwing punches yet, though. Connor Bedard is like five human lengths into the zone. Okay, that's how fast he is and how quick he got off. He won his, he pushed the puck forward so that he could go get it. His two line mates are both going that way. The two Leafs defensemen are back going, oh, shit. And, it was just, it might have been negotiated, but on a face-off draw where you're in, it's not in the zone, but it's, the closest face-off zone in the neutral. And you don't even wait to see if they win, and you could have had offensive zone time in a scoreless game against one of the most offensive teams in the league. That's, I think, bad timing. Okay. Yeah. That's not great timing. And again, if Connor Bedard's shot had gone in, people would have been complaining. The only reason people are like, no, it's fine, is because that shot didn't go in. But what if it had, would you have wanted Connor Bedard's first, ooh, that's a shot, to get wiped off because of that?
I think that's a fair point. I think I would say one thing about the way that rush developed off the draw was because Gregor was the left wing on the draw for Toronto, and he immediately skated towards Murphy without giving any type of fuck about the other Hawks, whoever the right wing was for the Hawks of that draw. So I think it may not have looked as threatening of a chance if Gregor was committed to playing his role instead of getting into the fight.
Try to play real hockey because it's not great.
Fair points. I think the general idea is it's on the attacking half of the ice. Connor Bedard's taking the draw. No, he hasn't been great at winning faceoffs this year, but still, it's Connor Bedard. It's just it's a time and place thing. It's like, if what you really want to do is you want to negotiate that in a defensive zone draw so that Gregor fucks up a Toronto scoring chance to start this fight. It's just when they want to settle these scores, again, I don't get too wrapped up about these in game four of an 82-game season. I would hope that if this was 3 years from now and the Hawks are in the second or third round of the playoffs and they're not trying to settle scores like this in the third period of a one-goal game, that'd be really fucking stupid, and I hope that they would recognize that, situation and let this thing go. But you can also, just reverse engineer that that thought process to, well, if you're not going to do that in the middle of a playoff series, why are you doing it now? But I guess, you know, send a message or team camaraderie, whatever, whatever, like all the hockey players say it. And sometimes it just feels like they are just confirming their own biases every time they say that. And I don't know if I believe them when they say it has an effect in the room, that I feel like they're just saying that because that's what every hockey player has said in the history of hockey.
And I'll admit that I don't, like I said, I don't care. Like, I don't mind fights for stepping up for your teammates. I think that's fine. I did think it's weird that some people were arguing, well, Gregor was targeting Bedard. He hit him twice. And one of them, he did hit him hard, but like, that's hockey. If you're a meatball and you're like happy for fights, how are you not happy for big hits? Big clean hits. As long as it's clean, what does it matter, right? Like, obviously, we don't want Bedard to get hurt even on a clean hit, but like, that's hockey. You're watching the sport that you like, and it has hard hits. Get over it. and after that, Gregor still had like three more hits, you know, like three or four more hits. He didn't stop because Murphy fought him, you know, because he didn't see anything wrong in what he did, which because he didn't do anything wrong. So you can sit there and say that you're, what message is being sent? Because he didn't, his behavior didn't change.
there was that point as well.
We have seen in the past where people have changed. When Boland made Marchand look dumb in the Boston series, you could see Marchand kind of like pulled back. You know, do you remember that? Like Andrew Shaw made him kind of look ridiculous, and then Boland made him look ridiculous, and they didn't fight. They just went at him hard. And I think like, who was the one that like, did the flinch at him and like he was going to hit him, but he didn't. And Marchand like flinched backwards.
I thought Marchand made Boland flinch.
I thought it was the other way around. But either way, all I know is that like Marchand didn't play as well or as hard in those last few games of Boston. And it was after one of them did something to him. And then Hossa has, without fighting, made several people, including Corey Perry, like idiotic, and their behavior changed slightly because of it. And it didn't involve fists at all.
And I just want, since you mentioned Corey Perry, I wanted to bring up, there was a clip going around in the first period of Ryan Reeve talking a bunch of shit to Corey Perry. Corey Perry scored the game-winning goal on Monday night. Ryan Reeve skated 6 minutes, so I think we know who won that argument. Eric, though, I want to bring you in and get your thoughts on this whole argument and discussion or whatever we're having here.
Anybody else who wants to learn anything about Ryan Reeves, go watch, go Google Ryan Reeves Arbor Zakai, who's on Montreal, and enjoy that clip. But as I'm like talking about this, you know, I'm applauding a fight, but then in the meantime, I'm going to go on
Seattle, and say, Colorado. Are you watching that game too?
No, I was talking about when Zakai took it to Ryan Reeves the other night.
I gotcha.
But no, that Boston game to me, they were chasing, they were down a goal. Dickinson, I still don't know why he got a misconduct. I'm still waiting to hear that.
Yeah.
But no, I think it was Gutman who got taken out, and Dickinson jumped in. That negated the power play, and then that put them down another forward after they're already down Hall. So, I mean, that's not something that benefits your team in any way, you know. And they were a step behind chasing Boston for the rest of the game. And, you know, they were two skaters down. And again, it negated a power play. Yes, the power play has not been nails by any stretch of the imagination so far. So you could say maybe they don't score on that regardless. But you're still, you have another forward on your bench then. So you're not thin chasing, you know, the way that you are. So that's, I don't know how that benefits your team. You know, and maybe in that moment, like, you think he's really hurt and you feel like you have to do something. But I think that's kind of a thing that we've seen happen a lot. Like the amount of times that that's positively impacted a game, like I can't really recall that. And, you know, but then Betsy's here, like talking about the times when not fighting has, you know, helped benefit a team, and it's kind of towing that line. So that's already, you know, a situation 4 games into the season where, and that's one of the 2 games that they've lost, where, you know, was that the difference? Maybe, maybe not. But it definitely, I don't see the benefit of that. I don't see the benefit of doing that. So I'm on board. You know, I don't, you don't need to chase the fights. They're going to happen. They're going to happen sometimes. But it feels like there's been a pretty significant amount already in the first few games, especially compared to kind of what we saw from them last season. And it hasn't been Perry and it hasn't been Foligno. You know, it's Dickinson, it's Murphy. And that's kind of a little bit surprising in its own way, too.
Yeah, and I think the phrase you use there, Eric, of chasing fights, I think that's when it starts to get a little exhausting for me, that you're going out of your way to do this, and it's not if the fights develop naturally within the flow of the game. It's still slightly weird that hockey is like the only sport where you can do this, but whatever. If it develops within the natural flow of the game, fine, cool, go ahead, knock yourself out, or well, knock the other guy out. Don't knock yourself out, but just don't. When you chase it, that's usually when the instigator penalty gets involved, or you get an extra misconduct, or other dumb shit happens, and then you're just creating opportunities for the other team to beat you by doing this thing that sometimes seems a little selfish to me, that you're doing it. And you know, I still struggle to identify with the things all the hockey players say about how it helps in the room and all that. I cannot wrap my head around that concept. And I know I was never a professional hockey player, so maybe I just don't get it.
I don't think anybody, though, if Gutman gets hit and nobody jumps in to pick up the guy that hit him, do you really think he's going into the locker room and like he's like, my teammates don't have my back?
Everyone hates me. Yeah.
Well, and think about, especially by the time you've gotten to the NHL, however many thousands of hockey games he's played, I'm sure there's been tons of times he's been lit up and nobody's done anything about it. And you just get back up and you keep playing and you move on. Like,
I know
that that's the thing. What's the difference? Why is it sometimes this is a big reaction in a fight and other times it's just a hit and it's a natural part of the game? Like, checking is a part of hockey. You don't have to respond like that every single time, especially when it's a clean hit.
Or, and they're upset. Like, why don't you react with, you know, play them harder? You know, Murphy is a great, like, he hits and he checks hard. He could just do that to Gregor over, like, give him a taste of his own medicine. Good, strong, clean hits. You know, he doesn't have to drop the gloves there. Which, by the way, the thing I was thinking of was the Marchand-Shaw fight, not the thing. Okay. The Boland thing was he tried to make him flinch and Marchand didn't, but people were like,
there
Marchand
it is.
Stopped playing well after that game. Like, he wasn't playing as well. Of course, half Boston was really fucking hurt, so who knows? But anyway, there's other ways I think that it could be handled in a hockey way that is like, again, I don't mind fights. I don't mind sticking up for your teammates, but in certain instances where you are, it is detrimental to your team. And Eric's example is more detrimental than my example. My example was, I don't think that's a great time to do it. Please don't, you know, like, just don't. But there wasn't any guarantee. It wasn't a power play. It wasn't guaranteed zone time, that kind of stuff, but just hit hard yourself, like go out there and hurt them the way that they're hurting you in a legal, clean way.
So do the Montreal Canadiens hate Kirby Dach because nobody fought Tenorti after Tenorti essentially ended Kirby Dach's season, by the way? I saw they're thinking he's out long term.
Yeah, 6 months, it sounds like, at least.
Yeah. I think the NHL needs to be like, hey, please don't hit along. Like, maybe don't try to knock people into the board, like into the benches, because more like there have been a couple of injuries from that.
Yeah.
It's not exactly safe. But yeah, they all hate him up there. That's how
I don't know. It's just it's such a weird part of the game, and I don't think I'll ever understand it. Even like as someone who I feel like I've watched hockey for a pretty good amount of time, and I think I fully recognize that pro athletes exist in a world completely different from the rest of us. But I still just this is the one thing that like I cannot see the perspective that they are sharing when they talk about this type of thing, and I don't know if I ever will.
I'd much rather see go score a goal and skate by the bench and point at that dude. There you go. That's way more fun. That's way better.
Yeah.
I feel like, was it Q that said one time, like he was like, he got mad at somebody for getting into a fight. And he was like, he said something like, go score a goal instead or something like that. So Q, like Who's somebody I feel in? Like,
I feel like it was kind of like beat him on the scoreboard or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, it was beat him on the scoreboard. It was just that, and it's not. Q was fine with fighting when it was necessary. He just was like, you know, pick your time. He sat Shaw after a fight in 2014, and I remember people being like, "Oh, Shaw hasn't played for a while," and it was literally after the fight. Oh, maybe he got hurt, and no, it was because he was like, "That was a stupid ass fight. Why'd you do that?" Yeah. You know, like. Don't do that.
And like, you know, Quinville was also a former hockey player who I believe played before Richardson's era. So Quinville would have been more of the old school, like where fighting was even more widespread in the game than it is now. So I don't think it's like
he still started Brandon Bolig in a Stanley Cup final game. So let's not give him all the credit. In
also
the world
true.
There.
Also very true.
Like we're not trying to say that. he, for some reason, he thought Bolig was a good player, though. Like, he played him a lot during the 2014 season. Yeah. Like, why? But he did. He played him a lot.
Yeah. All right. Well, I know we have reached the end of the hockey things we need to talk about if Brandon Bolig's name came up. So, but before we move on to our usual food take discussion, any other Blackhawks related thoughts before we wrap this all up?
I mean, they have a chance to come back. This is a pretty daunting road trip, especially to start the season, you know, with a newer team, kind of with some older guys who may be washed up and some younger guys who are maybe not even washed yet. the fact that they could, no, they have not. The fact that they could come home, I mean, depending on what goes on, you know, in Colorado, it's hard not to be kind of pretty positive about the way that the team has looked so far. And like the overall road trip, I think regardless of whether or not they win or lose in Colorado, so long as they don't get totally blown out, like, yeah, it's pretty positive. You know, we'll always find things to talk about, but overall, like, yeah, it's so far so good.
Exactly. I think that's a good way to describe it. So far so good. Well, and then if that's the case, then I guess we can reclaim our mantle as the best food-themed hockey podcast on the internet. And Betsy, you have a food prompt or discussion or question or something to bring for this one?
Yeah, I just want to know. So it's a thing in the South. Do you guys eat ambrosia salad?
Eat a what?
So this is another salad that's not a salad from the South thing here, isn't it? That's the one with like marshmallows and Jell-O and
it's a salad. It just doesn't have lettuce. And it's a salad. It's a fruit salad with most. It's like you have okay. So
it's marshmallow and coconut, right?
Oh, I think.
So it's not coconut's not usually used in it. It's a fruit salad. You're supposed to if you're going to be real legit, it's got to be canned pineapple, canned oranges. You can kind of do fresh oranges a little bit more, but it's whatever. Marshmallows, you usually middle. You can have some coconut in it, but we don't usually put coconut in ours. We usually use cherries, and then it's mayonnaise.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Some type of dairy, like whipped cream, sour cream. Sometimes people put yogurt in it, but like mayonnaise is like the most popular. And it's the key is that most of that fruit has got to be canned.
Yeah. I feel like I have seen this. I'm just going to Google it now. I feel like I've definitely seen this at some gatherings. I don't know if it was family or friends or what, but I am familiar with this. I think it's what's more common among my the food large food based gatherings that I attend is usually taffy apple salad, which is like Snickers and peanuts and apples is usually in there. But I think I've seen ambrosia, like it's always you're looking at it and you're trying to decide if it is the ambrosia salad or the taffy apple salad.
Somebody told me that maybe it might be known as another name that some people will eat something called a Watergate salad. And I looked it up and I was like, that doesn't look the same. That looks green as shit. Because it's got.
Where the hell did Watergate? I need to know how and why it's called Watergate.
I don't know. It's some people call it the pistachio delight salad. And it's got pistachio pudding where you would put like mayonnaise or whatever. But it's the same thing. It's like pineapple, some type of whipped topping. They put like nuts in it, I guess. You could put cherries on it, and then marshmallows.
I'm pretty sure I'm going to the grocery store after this conversation. I'm pretty sure I can go get a thing of pistachio delight right now. So I think that is a very common thing, even up this far north.
Okay, so you've heard of that one. So, yes. Okay,
I have not.
Okay, so pistachio delight, I guess, is like a type of. It's not too far off ambrosia salad then. So you guys have like a version-ish of it. I've never had pistachio pudding before. I don't think I've ever even seen it. I don't like pistachio ice cream though, so I don't know if I would like pudding.
Yeah, me neither. Although I feel like now if I see it, I will acquire it and try it and report back for sure.
I asked about it because I follow that one TikTok where the guy's from somewhere in Missouri, and he's like, now let's talk about the South. And he brought it up and he was like, now people need to remember, it's got to be canned. And I remember being like, oh shit, where is it always canned? It is always canned. When you get like canned little mandarin slices, I was like, I forgot. Like everything comes in cans. The other day somebody was like, I had canned these like canned muffins. And I was like, excuse me? Muffins?
Yeah, that's a strange.
I thought that was like a SpongeBob joke, like canned bread. But no, apparently that exists. I just have never done it before. I've never seen it before. But I guess lots of things are canned. Like if you don't make your own cranberry sauce at Thanksgiving, because people are like, no, it's got to be the canned kind. It's gross. I don't like canned.
I think there's certain things everybody has where you prefer the terrible version that you grew up eating because you have some type of weird nostalgia attached to it. But yeah, ambrosia salad, I feel like that was a thing I saw a bunch when I was a kid at like block parties and cookouts and stuff.
Yeah, but that's what I'm thinking of, Eric.
I haven't seen it in a very long time. So it almost feels like one of those things that kind of died with the times, at least up here.
Yeah, it's still a thing in the South. I don't know if it's as much of a thing, but it's kind of like fruitcake's still pretty regularly. People will bring that and you'll be like, but why?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think like we're being in Indiana, like there, like our corner of the state is definitely more Midwestern influenced, but there are other parts of like the majority of the rest of Indiana is very much like dipping your toe in the South in terms of just overall culture, including food. So I think there are still some Southern-esque influences in what we do food-wise here. And I have like family roots that go back to West Virginia. And I think that's that can be pretty Southern in culture. And yeah. So I think there's some things that I don't realize that are just normal to me because they've been part of my entire life. And I don't think I realize that they are a little bit more Southern than most Midwest things are. And it feels like, Eric, you might be more of a traditional Midwesterner than I am.
Well, I also think growing up, you know, in a bigger city where there's a lot more like different cultural stuff and different, you know, food stuff, and it's possible it's just kind of like my family and the more European tendencies, you know, that we kind of grew up like. There's some weird stuff. My aunt went to culinary school. She was making all kinds of crazy stuff, you know, as a kid that you think is just normal. And then when you talk to people when you're older and then they're like, what is that? So
what is that? Why did you do that?
Who but told yeah, you that I feel was a like, good idea? Exactly. I feel like I saw the ambrosia a lot when I was younger. I haven't in a long time now.
All right. Well, ambrosia salad. I'm going to be on keeping my eye out for it at all future gatherings.
I want to know I was trying to remember the last time I had it and if it was mayonnaise or a like cream type of thing, and I'm pretty sure it was mayonnaise. And then I'm thinking, but why mayonnaise and fruit? That's a weird. The Southerns love mayonnaise though.
I want to react to the mayonnaise comments the way that you reacted to Dave camping in cold weather. I just want to be like, no, why would you do that?
I learned recently when I was doing grilled cheese that if you put mayonnaise on the outside instead of butter, it tastes even better. And whoever gave me that tip, it's yes.
I know somebody who's a chef and they swear you do mayonnaise, butter, and mustard. And you do like a whip of that for grilled cheese. And they're like, that's the best grilled cheese you'll ever have in your life. So I've heard that, yeah, I've heard mayo before too.
Yeah. I just had never done it before. I've always just put down just a butter, squeeze butter. <All across. laughs> It's like the easiest way to do it when. So.
Squeeze yeah. butter.
All right.
You can well. Squeeze.
Well, I think on that note, I think that's a good way. It's a good point to end on for this episode of Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. Thanks to Eric and Betsy for hanging out this evening. Thanks to you for listening. And we will be back next week talking about, let's say like 20 goals for Connor Bedard in the next few games. We'll talk to you then.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Need a cold coffee with a bold flavor? Dunkin' Cold K-Cup pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. Brew over ice straight out of the Keurig coffee maker for smooth, delicious Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find your next Dunkin' Cold coffee in the roasted coffee aisle.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils, you'll want to invite everyone over, from book club to the fantasy league, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils are infused with 2 times more natural essential oils versus regular Airwick scented oils for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Transform your space with scents like white sage and mahogany or lavender and water lily. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.